We're speaking with Chris Kress, who's an organizer and activist who will be speaking in Battle Creek on Friday, November 13th, actually speaking in two events that day, sponsored by Kellogg Community College. And he'll be speaking about collective liberation. And Chris, I'd like you to explain what you mean by that term, collective liberation.
Yeah, collective liberation is a vision for multiracial democracy, for economic justice for all, essentially a vision of why white people should be committed to working against racism, why men should be working for feminism, and eliminating these inequalities, the structural inequalities, the cultural inequalities. We create a society that is much healthier, much more dynamic, much more beautiful for all of us. And so collective liberation is a way of uniting people who are overwhelmingly divided currently in society. White people from people of color around feminism, oftentimes men seeing it as something where it's, feminists hate men, looking past those divisions to see what is the unity of feminism for all of us, of racial justice for all of us, of LGBT rights for all of us. Really being able to see how we can create a society that truly loves and respects and resources all of our children, all of our elders.
What are the biggest obstacles, do you think, to for example, getting people who are white to be concerned about issues of racism affecting those who are not white?
The development of racism in the United States, a lot of times it gets mistaken as being inevitable, as being natural. But the truth is that racism has been creeping into our society as a way of dividing indentured European servants from enslaved Africans, from dividing working class and poor white people from working class communities of color, to work for economic justice for all, to work for health care for all. The slave masters in the early development of this country purposefully divided Europeans from Africans in fear of working people, everyday people coming together to demand a society that respects and resources and shares the wealth with all of us, the wealth that their labor was producing. So racism then creates a death culture that poisons the hearts of white people to see, turns white people's capacity for love into an engine of hate and resentment towards people of color. So really being able to try to tap into what that resentment, that anger, that fear that racism breeds within white communities, and really seeing it as the poison or the cancer that it is, and being able to talk to white people about how this is really negatively impacting our lives, our communities, our children, how racism is deforming our humanity, and really being able to then, for me as a white person, a big part of my work is to create a different kind of leadership in white communities that is for racial justice, that is against racism. Because far too often, I know as a kid, the visible leadership that I saw in white communities was often racist, or at least antagonistic to racial justice. So a different kind of leadership in white communities that identifies racial justice as a goal for all of us. A different kind of leadership amongst men that identifies and understands and can communicate why feminism is a way of increasing all of our capacities to live a more healthy life, a more connected community-based life in our families and in our society.
You've said that you work from or try to organize from a place of love, as you put it.
A lot of times, as a white person, you start to come into consciousness about the horrors of racism, and it's really devastating to learn about, to really truly look at the history of slavery, of genocide and colonization in the United States, and to really develop a lot of anger or guilt or shame around the history and legacy and current realities of racism. And so for me, as a white person, is really being able to tap in, because also there's been a long history of white people who have stood for racial justice, who have stood for multiracial democracy, who have joined with the Black liberation struggle and other communities of color in struggles for a better world. And so to really develop a sense of love for myself, but then for other white people, and knowing that, you know, white people overwhelmingly do not make a conscious choice of, yes, I want to embrace an agenda of hate. Yes, I want to have this death culture of racism be shaping my family. But racism really is an attack on white people's hearts and minds to turn them into soldiers of racism. And so to really be able to see that for what it is, and to be able to love communities, and in this case, white communities, to be able to love the visions and aspirations within white communities, and to see how racism is a barrier and an assault on the humanity of white people that needs to be removed. And so to really see love as a powerful force, love as a way of being able to connect to other people's most cherished values, and being able to work from a place of love for this vision of collective liberation, a vision of beloved community, a vision of a better world, as opposed to only focusing on, you know, ways that white people, you know, have white privilege, or ways that white people support this, you know, racist system, which are also important aspects to look at, the ways that white people do experience privilege, the ways that economic and cultural institutions in the society do value white lives over black lives, but to also see the ways that racism is really creating a death culture in white communities that needs to be ended.
So you don't feel that, for example, constantly telling someone who is white to, as they say, check your privileges is necessarily very productive?
Well, a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of working class white folks who, you know, have really been seeing wages decrease, resources in our communities being taken away, budget cuts, and, you know, corporations taking previously unionized or well-paying jobs, taking those jobs out of the country. And so there's a lot of white folks that are really scrambling economically and are angry, rightfully angry. And so sometimes if it's just like a check your privilege to those to white folks who are really struggling, it can create a resentment and kind of a, well, who are you to be telling me to check my privilege? So I don't usually start with check your privilege. I start with, you know, let's check our humanity. Let's check our values. Let's check our aspirations and dreams and how racism is really destroying the values that are core to many, many, many white people. And then learning about privilege is a part of that journey because, yes, I mean, the way that the police, the ways that the criminal justice system, the way that the courts treat white people is very different to how African Americans are treated, which is why we have the Black Lives Matter movement right now. So being able to see the ways that white privilege gets in the way of white people listening, believing, hearing the experiences of black people, and then joining in the Black Lives Matter movement is real. And I also, as an anti-racist, want to be communicating a vision of economic justice and multiracial democracy for all that can really resonate and move white people's hearts and minds in a way that then connects to this collective liberation vision and doesn't make white people feel like they're just obstructionists to justice and that their only role they can play is to stop being such haters. We also need to help support white people to see how much they can love justice, love the fight right now for a $15 minimum wage and how that is better for all of us, to support white people to love how the Black Lives Matter movement is the front line civil rights movement of our time that's expanding the possibility of a better world for all of us, for white people to be able to see how the Black Lives Matter movement fundamentally is advancing a love ethic, a beloved community ethic, and a human dignity ethic that will be better for all of us. So that's part of how I do my work, is really trying to bring white communities into multiracial movements for a democratic society that truly values, that truly incorporates and institutionalizes equality.
at the risk of oversimplifying, would you agree that the emphasis, you believe, should be on structural racism rather than on monitoring, you know, individual faux pas by specific people?
I mean, the individual faux pas, you know, that's the result of growing up in a culture where institutional racism has shaped the language, has shaped the worldview. And so for me, it's about structural racism. It's not about asking, you know, this whole question of sort of like, are these individual white people racist or not? That's not the fundamental question. The question is, what are we doing to change structural, institutional, cultural racism in the society? So institutional racism essentially creates a conveyor belt that white people are on, and that conveyor belt is moving towards an agenda of racism, an agenda of white supremacy. And so even if you're not consciously making a choice to move towards supporting racism, that conveyor belt, because of institutional racism in the economy, in healthcare, in education, that conveyor belt is moving white people. So oftentimes you have white people who will say, but I'm not racist, but they're still on that conveyor belt perpetuating racism. So our question is, what can we do to end structural racism and work for racial justice? So the question isn't, are you or aren't you a racist? The question should be, are you or aren't you working for racial justice? Because we need to be making conscious choices of where we are putting our time, our energy, our values to work. Because right now, for white people who are just saying, well, you know, Obama is president, and the Black Lives Matter movement is, perpetuating, is exaggerating, that is essentially supporting a racist system. You know, the colorblind post-racial society that is all supporting the maintaining of institutional racism. So the question isn't, are you or aren't you a racist? The question is, are you or aren't you working for racial justice? And if you're not working for racial justice, then either consciously or unconsciously, you're giving support to institutional racism in this death culture of white supremacy.
I wanted to touch on something that you have mentioned previously before we go, and that is your involvement and efforts to enlist men in the fight for the rights of women. And you consider that sort of part of just one ongoing struggle. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sexism raises men to be so emotionally disconnected from our lives, from our pain, our grief, our frustrations. And so the only emotions that men are encouraged or rewarded to express in the society are violence, rage, jealousy. And so it's no wonder that mass shootings all over this country are being done overwhelmingly by white men who are raised in this, you know, again, this death culture of sexism and racism, to internalize so much anger and resentment and to blame women or to blame LGBT folks or to blame Muslims or to blame people of color or immigrants for all of these failings, which are truly about economic inequality. I mean, the 1% in this country and the unbelievable economic disparities in this country are being externalized by young white men as anger towards people who they should be aligning themselves with. And so sexism is something that, again, tears apart our family, that turns men into, you know, again, using violence against people that they most love, using violence as a way of dealing with the challenges in life. So feminism is an opening up of possibility for men to truly be leaders, to truly be loving partners in creating a community that our values and our kids, our elders, would be raised in a healthy way. And so, again, sexism deeply disconnects men from the ability to build a healthy, democratic society that embraces equality culturally and institutionally. So for me, bringing men into feminism is both about ending the sexism and the violence against women, and also opening up men to the possibility of living a much more dignified life of community versus isolation, a much more vibrant life of authentic creativity and expression. expression as opposed to this narrow idea of what it means to be a man in the society, which is, again, so often about being disconnected from the vast majority of human emotion and living a life that's oftentimes very isolated. You know, we see depression and alcoholism and drug abuse and violence within the lives of men. And sexism is a huge reason for that. So feminism is a vision for men to live a much better life in a way that is also ending the sexist violence and sexist oppression against women. Well, it's always just really exciting to come in and work with communities, so the Center for Diversity and Innovation in Battle Creek, and to connect with and learn from what different communities all over the country are doing. It can oftentimes be overwhelming to see the racism in the headlines, the ways that, persistent sexist violence is happening in the headlines. But it's important to remember that racism and sexism are not inevitable. They're persistent, but they can be ended. And we can make choices about how we live our lives, join in community efforts like the Center for Diversity and Innovation, join in community efforts with others, and create a world that is far more healthy and dynamic and alive for all of us, for our kids, for our families, for all of us. And again, white people working against racism, men working for feminism is a huge part of building the beloved community and achieving collective liberation.
Chris Crass is an activist who will be speaking at Kellogg Community College and the Center for Diversity and Innovation this Friday, November 13th. That presentation starts at 6:30 in the evening at the Cool Family Community Center. Chris, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.